Welcome to this Voices in the Family special. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. The number of Americans ages 65 and older is projected to more than double from 46 million today to over 98 million by 2060. And 24% of our population at that time will be 65 and older. That's a staggering jump. And as the population ages, more and more want to stay in their own home as opposed to transitioning to a nursing care facility. But they need help and they need care. Home care is much more comfortable and personal, especially when patients and aides form positive relationships. There's a great need for professional home care workers. It's one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. But there are a few problems. One, home care is very expensive, and where low-income families can count on Medicaid to help pay for home care, many middle-class families don't receive this kind of support. So how do you pay for it? The second problem is that home aides and nurses are oftentimes undervalued and underpaid. The job is stressful, with long hours on your feet and little time to yourself. And yet, these people are so often paid less than a living wage. Well, joining me now is Joan Doyle. She's the executive director of Penn's Home and Hospice Care Program, to help paint a picture of today's home care industry. Joan, welcome.
Thank you.
Let's start at the beginning. Give us an overview of what home care is and what it's not.
Sure. Home care is an array of services that are provided, healthcare services that are provided for patients in their home, usually to help them recover from an illness or a recent hospitalization, or to help cope with a chronic disease. It encompasses multiple professionals: nurses, physical therapists, occupational therapists, home health aides, social workers, and as a team, they are all there to help the patient in whatever need they may have.
Taking a wild guess here that some variant of home care has been going on for maybe a couple thousand years?
Yeah, that's right. Florence Nightingale, I believe, was the first advocate of home health and having home care in the home. But I will say that home health care is the wave of and the future of health care. As you indicated, we have a tremendous number of our citizens aging, and by 2020, something like 20% of our population will be 65 and over. Many of those individuals will require some kind of health care, and the overwhelming majority of those individuals want care in their home if possible, and they also want to age in place at home.
Sure, and that's probably the healthiest way to go also. I mean, probably longevity. You have a longer life expectancy in the home than in an institution, I would imagine.
Well, and there's certainly the quality and satisfaction of people being in their home is far greater than those that have to be in institutions or hospitals.
So what got you into this business?
So I started my career. I'm a nurse by background. I began my career as an inpatient. I worked at the Hospital University of Penn and was a nurse manager there. And about 20 years ago, had the opportunity to be part of the startup of Penn Home Infusion Therapy, which is now a large home infusion provider of services in this region. And from that, I have all of the home care services of Penn under my purview. So we have home health, hospice, home infusion. We service over 4,000 patients on an average daily census.
Tell me how that number has changed over the last 5 years, 10 years.
Oh, I would say it's doubled over that period of time.
So how do you keep up with that? Do you have enough home health aides?
It is one of the challenges I believe that we'll face now and in the future is to make sure we're hiring qualified staff that are competent to care for individuals in their home who are really, we're seeing patients with very complex needs. We've been able to do that and get better at caring for patients in their home with having competent staff. And making sure that we are providing the training and education ongoing that they need to care for patients.
There's a dilemma here. How much do you pay a home health care worker?
We pay our home health care workers a living wage. We start at $15 an hour, and then we also pay a little bit more for experience.
This is kind of surprising because these numbers do not fit with the national trend. Nationally, the average hourly salary is $9 to $9.50 an hour. Average annual income is about $13,000 a year. How do you do that? How do you survive?
We probably don't always cover our costs, but our commitment to caring for patients in the home and making sure that we have individuals who feel valued and are part of our team. We are committed to doing that. It is a dilemma in terms of payment of home care aides in the home who are not providing. We get reimbursed by Medicare for all of our home care services and insurance. But those services are only meant to be intermittent, not long-term, and aren't really designed to care for individuals over the long course of their therapy. For those patients and families that want to pay for private services for AIDS, the economics are very challenging, as you've indicated before. And so the market rates for paying for home health aides is lower than I think it should be. And I believe that this will be a challenge for us in the future to figure out how to pay our home health care workers better wages so we can attract these individuals to this kind of work, which we will need in the future.
If I'm middle class and I need to hire someone, I don't have adequate insurance, and I need to hire someone to care for a loved one, what's it going to cost me?
It really varies from agency to agency. I mean, it's probably anywhere from $15 to $25 an hour.
$15 to $25 an hour, and that's a lot of money. If I need someone for 4, 5, 8 hours a day, every day.
That's right. And that's the dilemma that many families experience when they want to keep their family member at home, but there is no coverage other than using their own funds to do that. Many families will do that, and they will exhaust all of the savings that they have, and then they are left with little choice when they run out of their funds. They end up having to place their loved one in a skilled nursing facility or a long-term care facility that is covered by Medicaid.
What an awful choice.
Home health care only makes up 3% of the overall health care expenditures. So I believe investing more in home health care services out of that pie will enable health care to be provided more readily in the home. We're also seeing a change in models of care around payment models where hospitals and physician practices are being reimbursed for episodes of care. So hospitals are getting more involved in helping provide ways to monitor and keep patients at home.
I know you've been teaching a course for a while now, some 10 years, to nursing students. What do you teach them about home care?
Yeah, well, I taught a class at the Penn School of Nursing. It's called Home Health Care Concepts. I believe it was really important to educate our future nursing students about the value of home health care, and it will be a very important part of the continuum. I teach them about all aspects of home health care and different models of care that are developing. I did devote a whole class to home health care aides because I feel it's extremely important that the students understand the value of aides, whether they are in the hospital or whether they're at home. These individuals are very important members of our healthcare team. They should be valued and respected and included as part of the healthcare team.
You say they should be valued. Why are they not?
I think that maybe because they don't provide, you know, high-tech, skilled kinds of services, and they provide the basic services that patients need, that may not be always valued, but it certainly should be. And anyone that has experienced that need at home certainly understands the value of it.
If I'm looking for a home care agency for a loved one, what do I look for? What kind of criteria are important for me to know about?
Yeah, if you're looking for a home care agency, there are several things you can do. One is there's a website, it's called Home Health Compare, and it will show all agencies that receive Medicare funding, and they will give a rating, and you can look at individual outcomes that these agencies are experiencing with their care. The other thing is, I think if you look at agencies that are well established and that have a vast array of experience in the industry of caring for patients and that have staff that are competent and that they provide education for, and that they have really good supports in place that will help them develop professionally, and that they, you know, will further develop the competency of their staff.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Joan. That was Joan Doyle. She's the executive director of Penn's Home and Hospice Care Program. We're talking about home health care. The good news and the bad news about it. Joining me now is Tony Hariza. He produced a touching documentary with Deidre Fischel called Care. It was recently aired on WHYY-TV. That documentary captures some of the most intimate moments in the lives of home care workers and their patients. And it highlights some of the major problems in the home care industry. We're going to talk to Tony in a minute. But first, I'd like you to listen to an excerpt from the home care documentary.
I'm angry because being a home health aide, you're not getting enough money. I think we should get paid at least $15 an hour. The cost of living. I make $10 an hour. I still have to postpone Tyree from coming home. If he come home, what he coming to? He's not allowed to go to a women's shelter. He's not even allowed to come to the building to even ask the security guard, can I see my mother? Because they would tell him, even though he's a kid, you got to get out of here. You can't stay in here. They're very cruel, the shelter system.
Tony, tell us about Dolores.
Well, Dolores is a really dedicated, remarkable human being who provides care to other people, even though the way things are set up, she doesn't have the resources to provide care to her own family and to herself.
Why did you do this documentary in the first place? What drew you in?
My mother lived to be 99 and a half, and she spent up to 99 in her own home, a home she'd lived in for 60 years. So leaving would have been a big difficulty at that point. And she stayed in her home until 99 through the services of incredibly committed, compassionate, patient. There's all kinds of qualities that are required. Loving, funny care workers who were paid $10 an hour.
Who paid them?
We paid them from my mother's savings, and we paid them at the prevailing wage. Over time, even what we learned, it occurred to us we should give, the person's name was Sharon, we should give Sharon a raise. But that was after 5 years of paying her $10 an hour. It's a blind spot for a lot of people. And I'm a little ashamed of that, that we didn't see that she was living right at the edge while making my mother's life much more comfortable.
Did you know about her life outside of your mother's house?
We knew some. Her husband installed TV antennas, and when he was laid off is when we realized we needed to give her a raise because we understood, we knew about how close to the bone they were living.
In order to do this documentary, you had to go into people's homes. That's pretty intrusive to see some of their care and what they were receiving, the nature of these often very personal relationships. So how many homes were you thrown out of?
I think the larger thing is how hard it was to get invited in. Like most people, when asked, would you like to make this part of your life visible, you know, on television, in a documentary, say no. It's like this is a very private, difficult thing, that period of frailty. And so that was the first challenge, is who will agree. And both care worker and client had to agree. I want to make a mention here that a lot of the intimacy came from the director, Deirdre Fischel's ability to go by herself without a crew and spend long periods of time. And that became she was one more intimate, almost family member in some of the cases. And the qualities in the film that have that intimacy are really a product of that.
What impact did this have on you, Tony?
Well, I think none of us like to think about our own aging and potential frailty. We think of able-bodiedness and our capacity is rewarded. And I feel like this film made me much more aware of the parts of our population that have great deal of vitality left, but who were not necessarily able-bodied and able to live independently. And I see people on the street. I pay attention in a different way than I did before. I see care workers. I pay attention. And I think about my own life. I think about that part of life. And our film encourages people to have the discussion where they think about their own families. Maybe it's the next generation, but we also need to think about our own period, end of life period, to think about how that works in their community and to think about how that works at a policy level. And it's worked on me at all those levels.
What are your thoughts about your own aging, Tony?
Well, this may be too personal, but I shared with you that I'm retiring from my job today. I'm 65. It's challenging in our society to think about aging in a positive way because most of the messages we get are like to avert our eyes or to avoid the discussion or to idealize youth. But I'm embracing it wholeheartedly. I am blessed currently with good health. I have, I have a lot of living to do. And I want to do that first in this period. There's the young old and the old old, I've learned in the making of this film. The young old is that this period I'm in now, which is we're healthy. We've, you know, this generation of baby boomers, we've had good health care. We've had good nutrition. So we have a period past formal employment that we can be really productive. And I intend to be that way. And then I will look at that later period and try to embrace it with grace and the joy that's available as frailty inevitably comes.
I've given a lot of talks about aging and the aging process and a couple of things. I'm teaching a course now on compassion, cultivating compassion for our aging bodies. And if you Google the words aging and compassion, all you get is cosmetics. There's no connection between those two. But the other thing I hear from my audience is the great fear is not death, but dependency.
Mm-hmm.
Frailty and dependency. And There's so much shame around losing your independence. And I think that's why this documentary is so poignant, because these people opened their doors and allowed you to see their own dependency, you know, and they did it with grace, and they do it with grace, and what great teachers they are.
I agree. I think we were tremendously fortunate.
Well, Tony, I want to thank you for doing this documentary, for the work you've done. I wish you great, great happiness and health in the next third of your life.
Thank you very much, Dr. Dan.
That was Tony Hariza, producer of CARE, the documentary. Coming up next, we'll hear from two home care workers and two people who run home care agencies. This is a Voices in the Family special. I'm Dan Gottlieb. We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back to this Voices in the Family special on home health care. I'm Dan Gottlieb. The home care industry is one of the most rapidly growing industries in the United States, with an ever-increasing aging population. We recently hosted a panel on these issues here at WHYY, where we also screened Tony Hariza's new documentary on home health care. I was joined on stage by Mark Beata, CEO of Beata Home Healthcare, and Karen Culp, CEO of Home Care Associates, to discuss how they run their businesses and how each company works to support their aides and nurses. Karen, what we saw in the documentary were all women, mostly immigrant workers, who were at the same time very loving and devoted caregivers. Is that the rule or the exception?
I think it's the rule. In order to do this work, it's pretty low paid. So if you want to make a lot of money and you want to, you know, get rich, you don't do this work. You do it because you have the heart for it, and we call it heart work. But I do think that, you know, in our case, we do make sure that people are well trained, that they get benefits, that they get paid time off. But, you know, when I talk to potential workers, I also always say to them, you know, unfortunately, because of the way reimbursement works, we can't pay you what you deserve. So if you want to make $15 or $16 or $17 an hour, there's Wawa down the street. So I try and paint a picture of what the job is like.
So we learned about the poor pay, and average salary is about $9.50 an hour nationwide. The average annual income is $13,000, and I think that puts one near or under the poverty line, certainly not a salary they can survive in. And to consider it a living wage, that would almost have to be doubled immediately, $18 to $20. And, you know, you guys have good hearts. You know, what would happen to your agency? We'll start with you, Mark.
Pay $18 an hour, we would be paying more than we're receiving, so we really wouldn't be agencies anymore. So we have to pay the payroll, all the recruiting, the insurance, the taxes, and all the coordination. I'm a good-hearted person, too. I tried to work with them what we get. Now I'm realizing I have to stand up for everybody. I have to go to Harrisburg. The state, it varies substantially by state. Delaware pays much better than Pennsylvania, and other states, North Carolina, worse. So I think we have to stand up as We have to be the voice for everybody.
Really, the healthcare worker is the person who's in the home the most, who can really prevent potentially bad things from happening. So if you can train that person and pay that person adequately, you can save costs down the line. So we do have to advocate with the state for that.
Mark, but I want to add one thing. It was presented as AIDS here. Nurses at home are paid less, therapists are paid less, physicians are paid less. Since the whole healthcare delivery system does not respect work at home, I'm working so home care gets what hospitals get. That's fair. It would be fair. I'll take 95%.
I have to tell you, I am on the receiving end, as I mentioned, and you can imagine my relationships with my nurses. I literally could not live without them. I mean, just try to imagine me trying to put my socks on. That would be a lifetime project. And my most fervent wish is that they get paid one day what they're worth. Of course, I also wish the same for athletes and politicians, but I don't think that's right. Now, a guy can wish, You both run different kinds of agencies. Karen, yours is a worker-owned.
Well, because we do give dividends, we actually are formed as a C corporation and a worker cooperative. So we share our profits. If we do well at the end of a year, those profits are shared equally. So as president of the company, I get one share, other worker owners get one share, and everybody gets an equal dividend. And it's a way to get people to buy into the work, to understand that if they do well, the whole company does well.
Mark, your company is also a for-profit.
Yes.
How does that work?
Well, I founded the company in 1975, so it's a corporation, but I'm the owner. So just like the corner store, we get the rates, and we try to pay and end up with a little bit at the end of the day. But we're interesting because now, as you read in the paper, we're going to be transitioning to a nonprofit because I really want to focus on mission over money and make sure that we're here in the community in 100 years providing the care. So I see both sides. So I've been a nonprofit posing as a prophet for a long time, I think.
Yeah. I want to be the voice of one of my nurses. Mm-hmm. And full disclosure, all of my nurses come from Bayada. So I want to be the voice of one of my nurses and say, okay, you're switching to nonprofit. What's in it for me?
What's in it for them? A lot of nurses have worked at places these days that have been bought, sold, and it's never been a good experience. So what we're doing is providing a long-standing mission and values, compassion, excellence, reliability, and the commitment is preventing it from being sold. So it's kind of security of mission. So we're all working together to make a difference, and a lot of people get a meaning out of their work. So I don't know if day to day we don't have any more money to work with, right? But hopefully maybe we'll can influence whoever the insurance companies in the state to pay better.
Do your home care workers get training, and are they licensed in Pennsylvania?
They actually are. We don't have an official license. There are regulations which certifies them as Medicare. There are regulations, but they don't have an official license, which would make it another thing. If you had a license, that would again help elevate it to a more professional.
What kind of training?
Well, they get, in our agency, they get 3 weeks of training. It's a combination of technical skills that they need to do the job, but more important than that, we teach communication skills, because anybody can really do the technical skills, but you have to know how to communicate with people. And you're communicating with all kinds of people who have all kinds of issues. So we spend a lot of time on something we call the 4 P's, where we teach people how to basically, get a person to talk to them and understand them and get them to do what they need to do. And that's been very successful for us over the last 24 years.
Mark, I'd like to hear what kind of training Bayada does for home care workers.
It varies because some of the aides that were in the movie, one had been doing it her whole life. You could tell she was very well experienced, so she doesn't need initial training. So it depends on what their background is. So they never did home care, never did hands-on care before. It's a whole training program. So you hire for character, and you can train the skills. So it could go from as low as 40 hours for low-level care, but then we always have ongoing training too. So, but it's I agree, we need more training and education.
And when you go to most agencies, and there are a lot of mom and pop small agencies that pop up, there's no training.
Oh, yeah, in Pennsylvania.
It's very scary, actually.
But for both of you, do they get mentoring?
Absolutely.
Supervision, guidance.
Absolutely. That's part of a quality job. So you have a supervisor, you have somebody who, and again, our style of supervision, we do something called coaching supervision, which is not about the traditional discipline. It's more about trying to get people to own their own issues so that we don't say, you know, you were late. Why were you late? That's terrible. It's more like, well, tell us what happened. You know, did you take a late bus? What can you do to improve that? So we try and get people to own their behavior and their issues.
There's two ways of asking the question, why were you late? If you say, why were you late, is different from saying, why were you late? One is curious. I'd really like to know.
Yeah. You know, it's really forming positive relationships, focusing on helping the clients, supporting them, caring about them, getting to know them, recognizing people. So you form a team.
So I hear through the grapevine that it's a stressful job. Very stressful job at so many levels. You know, beginning with pay and number of hours and caring for somebody and having that kind of responsibility on your shoulders. And then there's the families, and then there's your own family. What do your agencies do, if anything, to help their workers with stress directly?
I think one of the things that we would do is make sure we get a good match. Because you saw in the film, once they connect, then they're kind of I like helping care for someone, and if I have a good relationship, it's meaningful to me, and then the client back feels they feel somebody's making a difference to their life. You saw the connections in the movie.
Right.
So, but you know, it's like a marriage. Two people always don't connect. So you have to work to get the connection right.
Yeah. Karen?
So for us, you know, again, we've been around for 24 years. We have about 200 workers. Our workers, the people who work in the office have been home health aides, and they've been promoted through the system, and they basically know every one of the workers who comes in. For many, many years, we had people come in and not be on direct deposit because we wanted to see them every week. We haven't been able to do that so much anymore, but we make sure that we touch base. We talk to people when they do a good job as opposed to when they're in trouble.
And there's nothing that contributes to burnout and resentment quicker than working in a job where you feel, you know, the boss just doesn't care. That was Karen Culp, CEO of Home Care Associates, and Mark Beata, CEO of Beata Home Healthcare. Coming up, two home aides join the conversation and tell us their personal experience inside the home care industry. This is a Voices in the Family special. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Welcome back to this Voices in the Family special. I'm Dan Gottlieb. We're listening to excerpts of recent panel discussion we hosted here at WHYY on issues of home care. We screened a documentary film on the issue. We heard from two people who run home care agencies, Mark Beata of Beata Home Healthcare and Karen Culp, CEO of Home Care Associates. And we're also joined by two home care workers, Lori Bahajic and Lisa Savage. So let's start with you, Lori. How long have you been in the field, and what did you do before this?
I've been in and out of the field since I was 17 years old. I started working in a nursing home, and then I started having a family, so I started doing different career. And I've done home health care on and off for years. I haven't been in the field now since Larry passed away. I can't do it anymore.
So you took care of a man named Larry for 4 to 5 years.
Yes.
Tell us about what his needs were, and I want to hear about your relationship with him. what you meant to each other.
Well, I was his subconscious, if he liked it or not. If he was supposed to do physical therapy, he did physical therapy. Sometimes not all of it, but he did some physical therapy. I was his left hand, right hand when he needed me. I did all his bathing, help and grooming, and we would socialize, play card games, and goof around and be silly people. But he felt more like an uncle by the time I left, because he was my children. My son, who is now 8 years old, pretty much grew up in that house until Larry passed away. So it was, it's a hard job, you know. I had to make sure he took all of his medications, he could breathe, that was the biggest thing. Oxygen was important, and sometimes the hose got pinched and we had to go find where it was, or he would have a stressful moment and you had to calm him down so he could breathe. And the trips to Philadelphia were so hard. We would take 6 to 8 tanks of air just for the trip. That's not including the air he used while we were there for a 15-minute visit.
Tell me what happened to you as he was dying and after he died.
Well, right before he died, he was starting to really deteriorate, and they had given him morphine and stuff to help his pain and breathing labors. On the day he passed away, I had worked with him in the morning for my 8-hour shift. And then my daughter had also worked with him for her shift. And when her shift was over, his ex-wife, Talitha, would then take over. And he needed to use the restroom, and he collapsed. Well, she called me because I'm the closest. I was in walking distance. I was 5 houses away. So I walked down and tried to get him up, and he didn't want up. So he just laid there and looked at me and smiled, and he was gone. That was heartbreaking. It was really hard for me to handle that he just... I knew I had done a good job and took care of him because he smiled. You know, and he had told me he loved me once or twice, even when I angered him. I walked out and he fired me at least 100 times. No, because I would just, I was his subconscious, and sometimes he didn't like me.
He said he loved you. Did you love him?
I did love him.
Yeah.
It's hard not to become attached to somebody that you're in their life every day for 40 hours a week.
Yeah.
I even did things with him when I wasn't working just because he was my buddy. You know, he would get on his wheelchair and come up and visit me after work even. And we'd just sit and maybe drink a beer, you know. And then he'd go back on down the street. But it was always a good time. I mean, there were a lot of rough times where I had to really push, and I hated pushing, but it needed done.
Yeah.
If he didn't push, he didn't do it.
How do you feel today? Still pain?
I have gotten over the pain so much. I'm glad he's where he is. He's not in suffering anymore, and I know that I was an important asset to his life.
Good. How much were you paid?
I made $10 an hour, I think it was.
And what job are you doing now, and how much are you paid?
My pay at work, it had doubled. I went from $10 to $20.
You were driving a truck.
Driving dump truck, yes.
Lisa, you didn't come in to this profession voluntarily.
No, I didn't, Dan. My oldest son, I'm a caregiver of my oldest son. He's 27 years old now. He was shot 7 years ago. And He is now quadriplegic, so he's paralyzed from the chest down. At the time of his injury, I was employed with Verizon Communications. I had been there for 20 years, full benefits, great pay. And when we found out the severity of his injury and that he was going to need care, you know, for the rest of his life, the first thing he said to me is, "Mom, will you take care of me?" And there was no second thought. You know, I went ahead and took early retirement from my job, which was, there was no second thought. There was no second thought. You know, my son asked me to take care of him, so I just did it. I came out, and I've been taking care of him for almost 7 years now. Once he came home, after being in rehab and so forth in the hospitals, he came home. It took a whole year for me to actually get paid through Medicaid. And mind you, there was no fault of ours. Paperwork had been done before he even came home. You know, it was done while he was in the facility, in what the rehab.
What did Medicare pay you?
I'm sorry?
What does Medicare pay you?
I started off at $10 an hour. I now make $13.25. And his care is consumer-based, so he is he's my employer.
Yeah. So when I had my accident, the circumstances were different, but all of a sudden, you know, 1 minute you're walking, the next minute you're quadriplegic. Mm-hmm. When it happened, my wife at the time had to learn about quadriplegia, had to learn about home care, had to learn all these things. She was frightened and confused and overwhelmed. She had to hire nurses. She had to supervise them. She didn't have time to mourn her losses. Have you?
When Brandon was injured, same thing. I was there with him every day. Every day in the hospital, every day while he was in rehab, every day in the hospital. And I watched the nurses and the CNAs take care of him, and they showed me basically what to do. Caring for a quadriplegic is hard work. Brandon's not able to use his hands, so therefore I have to feed him, I have to dress him, I have to bathe him. I have to brush his teeth. Of course, I use the Hoyer lift to lift him.
And a Hoyer lift is an apparatus that lifts him out of the chair and in bed.
Correct.
Saves wear and tear on your back.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, he's not able to use an electric wheelchair as you are, Dr. Gottlieb. He has a manual chair because of his contractures. So his arms are stiff, so he's not able to use them. And he'd rather not use the head array.
The more advanced.
So, right. So I'm his legs. So I push him around. So in that case,
how is he doing emotionally?
He is great. He is great. My son. His mind is so sharp, and he has the best attitude. He gives me the strength to continue on. If he rolled into the room right now, he would light this room up. He would light this room up. He is the type of person, like I say, if you see him, you could see the light that shines off of him. But he would light up this place. He has the best attitude.
Tell me how you're doing.
I am good. I'm good because he's good. I'm good because he's good. I have, people tell me I have a great attitude also. Like I say, it's hard work, it's stressful work. But, I mean, I've had those moments when I sat on the side and cried, like we all have. But I know that as long as he's good, I'm good. And I know that I'm doing what he asked me to do. And this is the job that God has for me to do right now. And I'm doing my job.
I want to hear from Well, all four of you to a certain extent. Starting with you, Lisa, you're an advocate here for home care workers. Tell me what's your dream 5 years from now.
My dream for home care workers is beyond this fight for 15. My dream is that home care workers have a voice in the jobs that we do. My dream is that we have full benefits, a living wage, that we're appreciated and valued by society. We're valued by our consumers, but unfortunately we're not valued by society. And this video, this documentary that Tony did is awesome. And it just brought so many things to light. Everybody needs to, has to see this video. Everybody has to see this video. Legislature needs to know, our senators, our Congress have to know that the work that we do has value. And we need a living wage. We take care of our family members. You know, we're all getting old. We're all getting old, and it's coming to a point where it has to come to a point where we value our home care workers, where we value all workers,
and value the people you're taking care of too. Older people, people with disabilities.
Exactly.
They too are not respected in the larger culture.
Exactly.
So thank you. Thank you for that. Lori, I wonder if you have any thoughts.
Well, I would love to see that the people who take care of our older society and our disabled people get recognized better, and that it's a choice that we make as caregivers to take care of somebody, and I think that it's a special kind of person that can handle all the stress and everything else that goes along with it, and it's not an everybody job, but the people who do it should be recognized for what they do and should be appreciated and paid better. They deserve it. They're taking care of our elders, and our elders are the people who teach us.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows the kind of people you are, and people need to know what kind of people you are. Karen, let me ask you, what do you see 5 years from now? What do you want to see five years?
Well, that's very different than what I see. Well, I think I would like to see people be able to do this job and not have to work two or three other jobs. More and more that's what happens. So I want to see the wage at the point where people can make a decent living. I also think that, you know, if you're very, very rich or you're poor, there are ways to be able to get long-term care. If you're in the middle, it's extremely hard. So I would like to see a system where we provide insurance for people who are middle class who can get home care. That, I believe, is a fantasy. I don't think that's going to happen in the
so,
next 5 years.
So, Mark, I want to hear, don't be practical, I want to hear your dream.
Well, the vision of the company is to help millions of people worldwide, leave a lasting legacy so we're really built up for 100 years and be a trusted, a compassionate and trusted team of home health care professionals. To do that, we need better pay, better recognition, more training and education. There's a whole bunch of things. And there's a shortage. There's more and more people are going to need it. And there were, how we're struggling all the time. We have a shortage of staff, right? Mm-hmm. All the time.
Absolutely.
To meet the needs. So on one hand, there's a shortage. On the other hand, we can't pay enough. Something's got to give. So,
yeah.
But for some reason, I'm optimistic it's going to get better.
I am too.
I'm optimistic.
I am optimistic also.
That was Lori Bahajic and Lisa Savage, two home care professionals, along with Mark Beata of Beata Home Healthcare and Karen Culp of Home Care Associates, in a live panel discussion at WHYY following a screening of the documentary Care, by Deidre Fischel and Tony Hariza. We've just had the honor of hearing about the home care work these extraordinary women do as they enter people's homes, their lives, and care for them. We heard about their dedication and their kindness. We heard about the injustice of the poor salary they receive and how they have to live as a result. Personally, I want to say thank you to them for the work they do and for the good hearts they have. And I support them in their efforts to get the salaries they finally deserve. This has been a special edition of Voices in the Family. Voices in the Family is produced by Ali Lesperance. Mike and Scott is our editor. Bob Alls has been our engineer. Elizabeth Perez-Luna is our executive producer. And you can find more episodes of Voices in the Family by subscribing to iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Dan Gottlieb.